Please be seated. Well, you are a good group. You hang in there with us throughout the day, and we're working our way through a number of speakers, and we appreciate all of the efforts of all of you who have taken the time out of your day to come. The next person on my list is Daniel the Toxin. Is he here? Daniel?
Afternoon. My name is Daniel Toxin. I'm a member of the Atlanta Tribe. Real nervous.
Don't be nervous. Actually, we're all very friendly.
Well, I wasn't exactly sure what I was getting myself into coming here today. And I was a little confused. But I think just from what I've seen, is you're looking for that answer as to whether this will work or not. I had a problem years back, probably close to 16 years ago or so.
Oh, wow.
And so I don't know that anything that happened to me back then would kind of occur now, but knowing the people within our tribe that hold these positions that are higher, higher than everybody else, I would say that their problems do still exist. You're dealing with family, fighting family, and I don't know about everybody else's family, but my family, we all have that successful person in the family. We all have the one who's been in trouble in the family. We've all had the ones that are just maintaining. And I think, I try to explain it to some of my friends, and the best way I can do it is in my opinion, it's almost like being in high school. We have the bullies. We have the people that, the small kids that everybody picks on. We have the successful. We have the not so successful. We have the educated. We have the not so educated. And it's like taking the popular kids out of this certain class, putting them in front of everybody and saying, this is who everybody has to go to when they have problems. And the majority of the time, the small person doesn't get hurt. My case was dealing with a boss. I don't want to get into specifics. One, because my mother is in the courtroom. Another is because my aunt is. And it would be digging up old wounds. And what was done to me shouldn't be done to anybody. I have six kids. Job within the tribe. Well paying job, it was. And it was hard to pursue something against this person because I was young. I didn't really understand a lot of what was going on, but I do know that I needed my job. And unfortunately, that put a lot of stress on me. I turned to alcohol. And that shouldn't be forced upon me by other people. And yeah, a lot of it was my fault. I accept that. I have accepted that. hurt there for my tribe. I love my tribe. I'm an Idaho.
Sir, while you're thinking about how you're going to articulate what you want us to know, I think this is as good a time as any, and it's applicable to several of the speakers here today, and I'm kind of waiting for the best time to interject. And I think like any other small population community, like everywhere, there's good, there's bad, there's ugly, there's indifferent. And one of the best speeches I've ever read was by a college president given in I think the late 60s or early 70s when unrest was going on campuses across the country. And the title of the speech was Unloving Critics and Uncritical Lovers. That was the title. The theme of it was neither people nor institutions benefit from having unloving critics or uncritical lovers. The second part captured, to my mind, by the metaphor of the airline pilot who's flying the jetliner into the mountainside. He doesn't need people saying, you're doing a great job, keep it up. So when we come to point out ways that institutions can be improved, to my eye and to my ears, it's not a matter of any kind of disloyalty. It's an act of someone who loves the community but is looking for a way to make things better. And then, secondarily, I'd just like to say it's not necessary for you to go into any more detail than you are comfortable going into. And if you could take your experience, which I think all seven of us have the flavor of, okay, and let us know what you think we can do to help work with everyone we can work with to improve the system overall. And that might, I hope those comments help you. I don't make them to make you feel restrained in your comments. Believe it, I'm trying to help. So please, with that in mind, sir, I'm done interrupting.
Okay. I guess what I would have liked to have said was, I don't know that you are going to find an answer to do this, to do anything, because of the situations within our tribe. I do know that it does need somewhere to go, a different avenue needs to be somewhere in place for people to go to when my tribe in particular won't listen to what I have to say. I think that's important because, unfortunately, it is who you know whether or not you're going to get hurt. And it is who you know whether or not you're going to have a chance to even say anything or speak up or stand up for yourself. So I don't think that it's a bad thing what the tribe is trying to do, or the tribal governments, or as far as getting courts going or whatever, but I do think there needs to be something in place for the person that can't find the answers from the people that are supposed to be helping them.
So you see a problem. You're not sure if we're able to solve it, but if we can, you'd like us to.
Yes.
Okay. That's fair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lizzie Moose, is she here?
I'm here today because I feel that I have never had my rights more violated than I have through the Oneida Tribe of Indians and the Stockbridge-Munsee Tribe. I'm an educated professional. I earned an associate degree in nursing in 1983, and I've held that license since. the tribe will not hire me under any conditions, and I don't want to make I'm not a felon. We have felons that are serving on our committee, our business committee, our judiciary.
Excuse me just a minute. Gina, I think her light is on red, and she shouldn't be on red. She just began. Thank you. I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
And I have been treated so unfairly by the tribe. They don't have the decency to notify me when they decline me for every nursing position I apply for.
Just pull the mic down a little bit. Great, because we really want to hear you.
Yeah. I don't know where to go to get to appeal any of the things that the tribe does. They've started with me, and I wasn't raised in Wisconsin in the Oneida tribe. Maybe that's why, but I am half Oneida enrolled member and a member of the Kaw Tribe of Oklahoma. And since I've moved up here, the tribe has treated me unfairly and violated my due process. They started with taking my grandchildren away. I actually, through Brown County Tribal Court, got the first three. And then my sister got the second two and was going to take a third. And the tribe took that child away and adopted it into an ancestral home. My sister wrote a letter because she wasn't able to make it, and I tried to read it. With more of an advance notice, she would have been here today in court, but she'd like to express thoughts and experience with the ICW Act, the Oneida Child Protection Board, along with Brown County Child Services, as well as the guardian ad litem. And just one statement about the guardian litem is that she had never once met the person face-to-face. It was always just a phone call. She said that my understanding is that ICW was created to help keep our children within the immediate family instead of placement in a non-Indian home. That was a step in the right direction for our Native peoples, although the Act is very long and complicated to try and understand. The Act is very lengthy and very much to absorb. Between 2004 and 2005, Brown County, along with Allegheny County, assigned several social workers to my case, which is my sister, and she's a great aunt to the nieces and nephews. Also at the time, the Oneida Tribe social worker, who is now retired, just to mention, after all, she is Carol Garney, did, which was to take sides with the county workers, coach the new social worker, Amy Dingledine, and cause hurt feelings within my family. A quick overview of what happened is that when the birth of my niece, Abigail, Miss Garney gave me a cutoff date to contact her with my decision to have Abigail placed in my home. That date, I remember, was a Friday, so I called her office to inform her that I wanted to take Abigail into my home as I have her full sister, Leah. I got her voicemail and left the message. Her voicemail stated that she was off and on the cutoff date and would return my phone call on Monday. The following Monday, she returned my call informing me that it was too late and the letters had gone out to other relatives that may be interested in placement of the child. What dirty treatment this social worker played on my emotions. I felt betrayed by this woman that I'd been working with for the last few years. I went before the Oneida Child Protection Board along with my sister, which is me, my mother and my aunt, to plead our case that Abigail should have the opportunity to grow up with her full sister. We all were allowed to talk and explain the importance of sibling bonding. The mother to the husband that Abigail was placed with sat on the board, and I feel that she had a strong influence on that decision that the board made to keep her where she is now. The Oneida tribe's culture, they have clans, the turtle, the bear, and the wolf, and these clans were made up so that there wouldn't be any intermarriages. First cousins marrying first cousins, etc., that's what this case is. Well, this is where they placed her. The husband and wife's fathers are brothers. These people are and have gone against their own belief as they follow the Oneida cultural heritage up to that point. I was given names from Mrs. Garney of relatives that may be interested, and I never gave a couple's names, so I don't believe in that type of marriage. In ending, Brown and Allegheny County worked well at making it hard for us to try to get this child placed in an immediate relative's home. They worked by turning and saying things that caused myself and my sister to have hard feelings toward one another. Today, with them out of our lives, we have been able to overcome all that they did to cause hurt feelings and are now a close contact family. My siblings and I are all able to work with one another. The Stockbridge Muncie took one of the children I have at the age of 6. They tricked her into bribing her. And I've always been a trusting person because I am a professional nurse, and I've never been treated like that by people, especially supposedly my own kind. They took away one of the children as I went out of state for a nursing job and transferred the case from Brown County Court to Stockbridge Muncie because the great-grandmother who took this child from me was a tribal Stockbridge tribal member. She has a paper in here that says the reason she switched it to the tribal, her tribe, was she wrote, "I'm a tribal enrolled member." This little girl is 13 now, and when we read her Facebook, she still wants to come home, and there's nothing we can do about it. She's suicidal. She writes on there that she'd rather be dead. We send welfare checks that are not attended to. I can't find anybody in the tribe to help me. Tribe is like they disown me, like I'm not even one of theirs, which I don't care. They won't hire me. They won't give me my home, which I paid on for 10 years. They continue to treat me as if I'm a felon, yet we have a felon sitting on our business committee, chair board, that's supposed to be leading our tribe. Why does he get a job? I want some kind of justice done with this girl. I want this to be looked into because we have fought and fought and fought to get this little girl back who wants to come home. They now keep her from us at every means that they can. When they first got her at the age of 6, she was left alone with the great-grandfather that is not blood-related. He was just married to this great-grandmother, Karen Gardner, and died right in front of the little girl. She didn't know what to do, because this woman was, after she won the case, was out running around. She should have been home taking care of that man and not letting him die in front of this child. It's actually has stained her will to live. She doesn't want to live up there. I've tried hiring lawyers. Nobody wants to take the case. They continue, Brown County also continues to take away children that I have. I've got guardianship of my first great-grandchild. Brown County told my granddaughter to go over and get her, and they took her to the father's mother who has her now. That is an unsafe home, and there's nothing I can do about it. She used to be able to come on weekends, but these people have turned her against us. Or they tell us she's going out of town and it's to a prison to visit either the father or the grandmother's boyfriend. There's drugs and violence in that home. This child sees it. And when she sees us in public, she hangs her head and won't even acknowledge us. Something's got to be done again for these children. To be taken out of those types of homes and put in a home where she's loved, she's taken to church. She's tribally dressed and taken to the powwows, and she loves that, but she's even beginning not to even want to go there. I don't know what these people are doing to her. I can't get welfare checks to check on her. I can't get anything from the tribe.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your coming in. I appreciate your marks. If you want to have your sister's letter, you want to give it to Julie Rich, she will make a copy of all of that and be sure that all the justices have it, so we can consider her remarks, even though she couldn't be here and you you are doing well to read them to us. Thank you very much.
Because Brianna is on the list to be after my daughter, and that's my granddaughter. She wasn't able to be here because she just had her third child.
Yes.
And I will have her be able to write something up. And
yes, you can send something in, and I would send it to Julie Rich, Post Office Box 1688, and she will certainly see that we all get a copy.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
You really want to take those papers? And let's see. Our next speaker is Hush Tola Jones. Did I say it correctly? Yes? Okay.
Ma'am, sirs, my name is Hushtola Jones, 37 years old. I'm a Oneida tribal member. I've been living in Wisconsin for the last 16 years. The first 5 years I moved up here, I tried to seek employment from Oneida tribe. Since I don't have a familiar name, not related to anybody in the tribe, since I didn't grow up and wasn't raised around here, I have had a hard time gaining employment from the tribe. I've been here 16 years. I find it easier to go out and work in Brown County. So I'm here to state that I am not in agreement with Oneida Judicial Services. I would personally not have my children involved in that court. I trust Brown County Court more. They're a little bit more fair. I have a little bit more resources for myself, single mother. And not really in agreement with a lot of things the tribe does. And the court being the biggest one. I don't think the Oneida tribe is ready to practice family court yet. I think that the judges just got elected in the last couple years. I think that it was like a conversation that seems like the tribe was having to start the judicial. I think that the tribe should have started with other things like civil suits, civil court, instead of jumping on into the family court system. I think that's not all I wanted to say.
Okay, are there any questions?
What is it you'd like to see us do?
I think that the Oneida tribe needs more training, more experiences with this family court, because this family court stuff is a very touchy subject for a lot of people. Especially me, a mother, it affects my children. They're not able to attend the courts, but the repercussions that come from the decisions affect them in the long term. My mother was just talking about my 13-year-old daughter that is stuck in the Stockbridge Tribal Court. I have been petitioning these people since 2009. I've lost to them 3 times because I'm not a Stockbridge Muncie Tribal Court member. I have a hard time finding representation to represent me in their Stockbridge Tribal Court. And I probably haven't seen my daughter in almost a year because the people go at all links, any links, to keep us from communicating. We're not allowed to talk on the phone. They don't answer the phone when I call for her. I can leave messages on their voicemail for my daughter to call me back. She doesn't. I'm not allowed to talk to her on the computer. I'm not allowed to, or I can write letters, but she doesn't respond to me. Whenever I do get to talk to her, she says they do things like, one time I sent her pictures of us, the rest of the kids, myself. They opened her mail. They had her pictures on the table. They spilt things and ruined her pictures. They read her letters before she gets to them. And it's the great-grandmother who has custody of her now is not in good health. She has COPD. She has emphysema. She smokes cigarettes. She's probably close to 80, 85. And she is my daughter's great-grandmother, great paternal grandmother. I was told that when this from this lady that we would always be in contact and that I would have chances to be with my daughter, and that hasn't happened at all. Not voluntarily from the lady or not from the court. So I would just ask that. My other issue with the Oneida Child is that when this case started, my daughter is not an Oneida Child member. I am an Oneida Child member, but the Oneida Tribe could not help this case out because my kids were not tribal members. So I don't agree with the tribe being able to pick and choose who they can help and who they can't. Because I don't think it's fair for a non-tribal member to come file a lawsuit in the tribal court. I mean, it's...
So you're an Oneida, but your daughter is Stockbridge Muncie, is that right?
No, her great paternal grandmother switched roles a few years ago from Menominee Tribe to Stockbridge Muncie.
Okay.
So the great paternal grandmother is a member of the Stockbridge Muncie, not my daughter, not myself, not
but
her
is
father.
Is your daughter a member of any tribe?
Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I would just ask that, yeah, a lot of this stuff that goes on in tribal court, it's, or not even tribal court, tribe period, my tribe, Oneida tribe, you have to be related to someone with a good name, or you have to know people with a good name. That's for employment, that's for education, that's for housing, that's for tribal issues. And like I said, I've lived here for 16 years, and I find it easier to work, educate, live in Brown County or Outagamie County. And that's hard for me to say as a Native American woman.
And have you ever brought your concerns about custody of your daughter who was living with her paternal great-grandmother to the courts of Outagamie County or Brown County?
The case actually started in Brown County, and my mother had guardianship of her, and then her great paternal grandmother petitioned my mother for guardianship, and she won somehow in Brown County, and then my mother stated a few years later while she was gone, and I got no notice from Brown County that this court was being transferred to the Stockbridge Muncie Tribal Court. When this case originally started, the Stockbridge Muncie only had 7 or 8 codes in their law thing. Now, to date, they have like 32 codes, so they've added quite a few, almost like.
Okay, so the matter of your daughter's custody is now before the Stockbridge Muncie Tribal Court?
It's pretty much settled. They went straight for permanent guardianship in 2009. It took about 6 months to settle. I fought it 2 more times after that, and I got nowhere.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you very much for coming in and letting us know.
Thank you.
Brianna Jones, is she here? Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't get that message, but thank you for letting me know. Okay, Judge Sherman was here with us all day. I don't know if he's still remaining around here. There he is.
Michael DeBrasca.
Michael DeBrasca, I was told, is not going to speak. So unless Michael is here, that's the word I've got. Okay. Judge Sherman.
It's kind of fun to be on this side of the bench. It's been a long time since I've spoken to this court from this side of the bench, usually on the other side. Everybody has been too close, huh? Everybody's been quite eloquent, and I don't want to take up much of your time at this point. It's clear to me from your comments and the questions that you've been asking that you understand the issues here and that you've been thinking deeply about this stuff, and so I don't think there's a whole lot that I can add in terms of the technicalities to what my eloquent colleagues have already said, but I would like to provide a little perspective and talk a little bit about what the stakes are and how we got here. Like some of you, I have had the honor to serve in more than one branch of this government. Actually, Justice Prosser, I think, has served in all three. And it gives you a little bit of a different perspective. We went through the period of time when things were not as collegial as they are today. That can be difficult. Law exists so that people can resolve their disputes without killing each other. Before there was law, when people had disputes, they killed each other. That was the pre-existing condition to law. In the world that we live in, it's very unusual for there to be two sovereigns, let alone 12, who share the same land. Most of the time, when there's more than one sovereign on a piece of land, it's a disaster. You can think of Northern Ireland or the West Bank or other places where there is shared sovereignty that doesn't work. And it's not all that long ago that we were heading in that direction here. It's not an accident that we are working hard to be good neighbors today, because we emerged from a situation that was verging on disaster when people were armed with firearms on boat landings and people were threatened and racist epithets were yelled at them because they were exercising rights that the federal government guaranteed to them. And it took the leadership of brave and wise people, like my friend Walter Brissette, who went down to the boat landings and talked people away from the brink with nothing but the force of his personality. It took people like George Meyer and Tom Molson to be willing to sit down and to do what you're suggesting, the Teague protocols judges ought to do, but what nobody was doing at that time, and to come to an agreement. And all of that was so stressful to the fabric of our society, especially our society up north. It was so stressful to the fabric of our society that institutions of our government felt it was necessary to step forward and to take a leadership role in trying to repair that wound. The legislature created a joint legislative study committee that contained both members from the tribes and members from the legislature, the only permanent legislative study committee in the legislature, and the court system, under your leadership, created the forum of which I have long been a member. These were actions of farsightedness, visionary leadership, of people saying, we can't allow disaster. We can't allow groups of our own citizens not to get along. And so that's really all I want to say to you today, is that we've come a long way. We've been successful. We have collegial relationships that are the envy of the country and that other states are copying, really whole cloth, including this rule. Other states are copying. And we just need to be very careful that we not make a tragic and historic mistake. Thanks.
Is there anything, given your history, that we could do to yet further improve our relations with the tribes and perhaps address some concerns that have been voiced here today.
Well, yes, and I heard one, I think, very good suggestion earlier, and Justice Gableman picked up on it, and that was to bring together tribal judges and the court and state court judges, and speaking as an appellate judge, you know, I think those are really good ideas. An awful lot of the problems, a lot of the problems that we've heard about today are the same kind of problems that we hear about from our own courts. You know, I mean, that's, I probably hear about more of them at my level than you do at yours, because we weed them out before they get to you. But a lot of what people have been saying here are the same things that happen in our courts, and people have the same kinds of dissatisfaction, and, you know, that's normal, and we try to do what we can to ameliorate the pain and suffering of people, of course. That's why we're all here. But I think that communication, that working together, several people have alluded to the relationship that Judge Anderson in Bayfield County has with the Red Cliff Tribal Court up there, and how they work together. Judge Anderson actually sits in Red Cliff one day a week in order to make it convenient for people who may have transportation problems, and, you know, consults on a frequent basis with the Red Cliff Tribal Court to make sure, and they both ride along on each other's benches from time to time. I think the more things like that we can do, then the less of a gap we will have. And the more, you know, we will understand we're all in the same business. The tribal courts are in the exact same business that we're in, and, you know, to some extent, their point of view is a point of view that we're pointing toward. We are looking for restorative justice. We are looking to find circles of ways to bring people together and to solve problems. And so we have a lot to learn from both, in both directions, from each other.
Thank you very much. Let's see, Christina Danforth, is she with us?
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Christina Danforth. I'm the tribal chairwoman of the Oneida Tribe. I'm a tribal chairwoman, and I oversee the tribal council referred to as the Oneida Business Committee. And this is my second term as tribal chairwoman. I was chairwoman back in 2002 to 2005. I previously was also a appeals commissioner for the judiciary at Oneida for a short time in between my time off of sitting on tribal council for the last 17 years. So I come here with a lot of experience. I also come up here with the humbleness of my people, my community, my government. I come here to represent my tribe, but I also know that there are strong relationships between the Oneida Tribe and the tribes within the state, and the state government as well as the federal government. Our challenge here today is difficult. My challenge is difficult and somewhat awkward in some instances, because I am very close to the community, both in a relationship, from community relationships and family relationships. I guess what I have prepared is the written statement of our tribe. It talks about the history of the tribe, the evolution of the tribe, the business committee's authority and responsibility to its community through the General Tribal Council. The Oneida Business Committee is the go-between between General Tribal Council, the supreme governing body of our community, and the community itself. Our judiciary is an elected body and is independent of the business committee, of which I chair. So there are respected boundaries. They are done intentionally. And so I kind of struggle with going through my written remarks. I think it talks about, again, the responsibilities and authorities between General Tribal Council, Business Committee, the Judiciary, and some of the issues around governance. And we have a tribal membership of over 17,000 members. Over 7,000 of our members reside within two counties, Brown and Allegheny County. There are nearly 12,000 tribal members in the state of Wisconsin, so we are all over the state and primarily within two counties. And I know there was discussion earlier about there being a large population in Milwaukee. That is true. We have an office in Milwaukee. My experience somewhat prior to tribal government was within child welfare. My background is social work, so I did some child welfare issues, but I mostly did prevention with families. So I understand the long history of ICWA. I understand that our tribal government has some work to do yet around our laws and our policies. And again, my charge is policy. My charge is representation of my tribal community, both from a governance standpoint and to support the judiciary as well. Again, under our Constitution, the General Tribal Council is the supreme governing body, and the Business Committee is, by Constitution, responsible to carry out the directives of the General Tribal Council. And there was a description earlier about some transitions that occurred at the Oneida Tribe with the Judiciary. Back in January of 2013, General Tribal Council did support the new judicial law. They also supported the new qualifications for the judges. It was not an easy task. There was a lot of back and forth between the governing body, the General Tribal Council, and the Business Committee. And again, the Business Committee also has a role in developing policy and laws. So we are still responsible from a law development standpoint. We have our Legislative Operating Committee that creates the laws, and again, the Judiciary carries them out and interprets them. So I know there's been a lot of testimony of my tribal members today, and I support and encourage them. And again, this is not a perfected system that we have right now, but I think it is a good place for us to be at this point in time. As I said, there was a lot of back and forth between the development of the new judiciary with the new judges with new qualifications, and they are all elected. So I think there needs to be an understanding about the evolution of the new judiciary, which occurred in 2013. Some of the testimony that you heard today were issues prior to the 2013 development of the new laws. And so I think that's part of what you're hearing. And, of course, I'm not privy to the specifics of some of the cases that you heard parts of today. I don't believe it's my task to get into those things because of my boundaries. I'm trying to look after my notes and highlighting what I need to say without reading to everybody. Our judiciary came out of, it was an appeals commission that began with the hearing of employment grievances and decisions made by other entities within the tribe, and it determined matters arising under tribal law, including paternity, custody, child support, and divorce cases. In the 1990s and 2000s, the tribe, from time to time, contemplated replacing the Oneida Appeals Commission with a judicial system with broader jurisdiction and greater responsibilities. These lengthy deliberations culminated in the General Tribal Council's passage of the Oneida Judiciary Law in 2013 and the Oneida Business Committee's enactment of the Oneida Family Court Law in that same year. The Oneida Judiciary Law establishes a tribal court and court of appeals, defines the jurisdiction of these courts, delineates the qualifications for judges and justices, provides for the adoption of new rules, pleadings, practice, and procedure, and establishes a process for suspension, reprimand, removal of judges and justices. And a copy of the judiciary law is in my appendix of my written statement, attachment A. Family court law establishes the family court, defines its jurisdiction, such qualification for family court judges. It provides for the adoption of rules of pleading practice and procedure, and subjects family court judges to the process for suspension and reprimand removal set forth in the judiciary law. And again, a copy of the family court law is attachment B to my written statement. The petitioners for today are members of the tribe and either participated in or had an opportunity to participate in the legislative process and deliberations leading up to the adoption of the judiciary law and the family court law. Petitioner Carrie Danforth in particular, who wasn't able to be here today, played a role in this process by voicing concerns regarding the Oneida Appeals Commission's handling of a particular case. And that was his daughter that was here before you today. In response to Petitioner Danforth's concerns, the General Tribal Council amended the version of the judiciary law then under consideration by deleting provisions establishing a family division. The General Tribal Council also directed the Oneida Business Committee to promulgate separate legislation creating a family court and requiring family court judges to possess a Juris Doctorate degree and to have at least 5 years of experience practicing family law. On January 7th of 2013, with over 2,000 tribal members in attendance, the General Tribal Council adopted the judiciary law as amended by a large majority. And this you can see in our minutes, which are also attached for the January 7th, 2013 attachment C in the packet that was submitted. The business committee carried out the directives of the General Tribal Council by enacting the family court law on May 8th. Family court law incorporates requirements that family court judges possess a Juris Doctorate from an accredited law school, have at least 5 years experience in practicing family law, and either be admitted into the State Bar of Wisconsin or be licensed to a practice in another jurisdiction and be able to gain admission to the State Bar within a year. And that is under family court law subsection 151-7-1. Prior to implementing the judiciary law and the family court law, the petitioner, Danforth, submitted a petition to General Tribal Council for a meeting to consider repeal of Oneida laws related to child custody, child support, and paternity, and to consider directing the Oneida Appeals Commission to grant all requests to transfer cases to state circuit courts. Petitioner Danforth and Linda Dallas submitted additional petitions for a General Tribal Council meeting to consider immediately dissolving the Oneida Appeals Commission and to consider authorizing the family court to transfer cases back to the state circuit courts. So on July 8th of 2013, with over 2,000 tribal members in attendance at a General Tribal Council meeting with the petitioner's request was on the agenda. The general consensus of the assemblage was that these agenda items had been already addressed through adoption of the judiciary law and the family court law and did not merit further consideration. The General Tribal Council therefore adopted a motion to delete the items from the agenda, followed by a motion to adjourn the meeting. And you can see this in the July 8, 2013 General Tribal Council meeting minutes, which is attachment D. I guess what I want to further on this particular event is when this petitioner brought his issued to General Tribal Council. At that time, I was the treasurer and not the chairwoman. I think at that time, what happened was we have a consideration that we don't get into personnel matters. And while the petitioners were willing to plead their case in front of the community, there was also a sense that that wasn't the appropriate forum. Address the issue, yes. Address the issue around the judiciary, around qualification, around due process, so to speak, yes, but to the particulars, not necessarily. That was the sentiment of the assemblage at that time, the General Tribal Council. So I just kind of want to footnote that a little bit. And again, because the issues that transpired with Nona Danforth's case were prior to this transition, to some degree she may or may not got hung up in the transition from where her case started to where she is today. But that's my assumption, okay? But that's my understanding as well. But further, The petitioners assert that they were denied the right to present their issues to the General Tribal Council. In point of fact, however, they did present their concerns to General Tribal Council when the judiciary law was under consideration and were able to influence the legislative process. Additionally, upon obtaining the signatures of 50 qualified voters on a petition, the petitioners had the right to have their requests placed on the agenda for General Tribal Council meeting, and they were afforded this right.
You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about something that's in the minutes that you provided in Attachment D.
Okay.
Under paragraph numbered 4, there were, as you said, a motion to rescind and repeal a number of recent Oneida acts. And then item number 4 under 4 says, direct the Oneida Appeals Commission to grant all transfer of cases requests involving child custody, placement, and visitation, child support, and paternity requests, and submit them to the appropriate county or state court system. And that action, it says, was removed from the agenda. And I guess what I want to know is not so much why or whatever reason it was removed for. That's really the business of whatever Oneida does. But my question goes to, was there an impediment when someone was in Oneida court for one of those matters involving children, if they wanted to transfer to circuit court, was there an impediment to their being able to do that?
You know, that would be something that would be better answered by the judiciary itself, because I don't participate in any proceedings at all.
Okay.
I don't attend any of them.
All right.
And so I couldn't say yes or no.
Okay.
I just, from a government standpoint, I'm on the policy side of things, and I'm also on the, in a General Tribal Council, the other thing that occurs, just as a note, is that when General Tribal Council convenes, there's a general sense, it's not a requirement, but a general sense, that none of the judicial officers participate in General Tribal Council meetings in case something were to come up into a court proceeding. So they generally don't come. So your question about there being an impediment, I'm not sure, because I don't know any particulars of any particular cases.
Okay.
That I, because of my boundary, I try to stay removed from that.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I was just curious when I read it, and I thought maybe.
Yeah.
It reads
okay
to me as if you ask for a transfer, you have to get it. Whereas the present rule is if you ask for a transfer, it's discretionary.
Well, there isn't any present rule in what I was reading, so you're maybe looking at something different. I was looking just at the minutes about what was the motion.
That's exactly what I'm reading.
Okay. All right. But it's fair enough to say you don't know.
Yeah, you know, I wish I could answer that.
Who here is in the audience who might be able to answer it? There's someone?
Yeah, we do. Okay. You will be up again at the end, so I'll ask you my question at the end. That's
there are some judges. There are our Chief Judicial Officer, Jerry Hill, is here.
Good, okay.
Family Court Judge Collins is here.
And the young woman whose name I've now have lost among my papers.
What, Linda Dallas is here. Linda Dallas.
And what's your name? Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you. Are there any other questions?
Can I just make a few comments?
Of course. And we have your written comments, and it was very good of you to file them. It was very helpful.
Thank you. And I guess my comments now are based on my observations today.
Okay.
And listening to the
right
different testimonials. You know, I think there are a lot of issues on the table right now.
Yep.
And one of them that was spoken to was the historical transition of the United Tribe in 2013. The transition of going from an appeals commission to a judiciary. And because that's a newer system, there are some things that probably need improvement and maybe some changes, but that's something for the judiciary to review, and I'm sure they will do some of those things after today's hearing. There are some internal matters that were addressed today that are specifically within our rights as a government to address. And some of those were addressed or spoken to here as well. So I'm acknowledging these things. And there's also the political separation by the new judiciary. You know, there is a separation between governance and the judicial body. We have an agreement. It's a memorandum of agreement that if there are issues, that I, the chair, and the chief judicial officer would call for a meeting amongst the bodies to address issues. So that is in place. General Tribal Council is the supreme body of the tribe. We take direction from them. They approve things. They approve laws that are relevant to them versus something that would be an internal law or policy gets done at our level. So they are the supreme body, and I think we did address the new qualification of our judges. I guess my other comment is I know that there is room for improvement and changes, but it's because our system is new. It's been revamped since 2013, was about almost 3 years now. But there was a transition period, an actual transition. We adopted the laws, we adopted a new judiciary, but they just went into, the judges just got elected about a year ago, the new sitting judges. So that's the transition issue. And there are a lot of, the only other thing I want to talk about is, or mention is, there are a lot of variables among tribal courts, their laws, their policies, their institutions, their culture. So it's really difficult, I think, as a tribal leader to say that we all should do this or we all should do that. And I think that's your challenge here today, is to recognize, acknowledge that there are a lot of variables between tribal courts. They're in different phases of evolution. Some of them have been around a lot longer, have different levels of development. I know that, like, we don't even have a traffic court right now. We don't have laws on our books to address traffic, but there are other tribes that do. You know, we talked about divorce. That's relatively new to our judicial system. So there are things that are being addressed. But I think one of the things that was acknowledged by, I think Paul Stenzel was talking about, you know, there is a consent. There is a consent if you come into our court. It doesn't mean, I don't believe it's prohibitive, but it may be understood that way. But don't quote me either, because, again, I try to keep that boundary. Having been in tribal government, having been on the appeals commission, now back on tribal government, and trying to keep my relationships and my boundaries, but at the same time listening to the concerns of my people. You know, it was really hard to listen today, but I think, you know, God has a purpose for all of us here. So, you know, may the Creator be with each of us today as you deliberate and review and make recommendations, that we continue the communication, continue the conversation amongst the tribes and the justices in the state. I think that's very important. And there is an education component that needs to occur, you know, amongst the tribes and the circuit courts. But we've been working on that for years. When I was, I think, interning in social work, we started that conversation around ICWA. You know, I'm a product of being in foster care myself. So I understand. I understand the heartfelt needs of our people. And so, you know, you have a big responsibility in front of you today, as to each of us in this room, to make sure that we're doing the best that we can. But again, it doesn't mean that there isn't a need to improve upon what we have done. And again, to continue the conversation, to continue the communication, and to also hear the people who spoke today. You know, they all have a story. We all have a story. And it's important that we share them so that we can come to common ground, so there can be better harmony, not just between state and tribal courts, but amongst tribal courts themselves. So, you know, I just beg that you will give all of these things consideration.
Thank you very much. Did you have a question?
Yeah. I read your material and appreciate it. And as chairwoman of the tribe, you have the tribal people who think 801-54 is good as is, may need revision, and people who think 801-54 should be repealed, and people who think that... Well, it could be a adapted, and you heard our discussion on that. And I read you and your material as saying that the changes in the tribal rules and laws, but that you are not in favor of Rule Petition 1402 to dissipate, to repeal this.
In favor of repealing
54.
Not in favor of repealing that. That would be a step backward for all of us.
That's what I
mean. But that's why my message is about how can we move forward and improve the systems in place. That is very important, but it's also very important that people are educated both at the community level and the circuit court level and the tribal judicial level, that we're all serving our constituents to the extent that's to everyone's benefit, so that there's fairness.
And what steps are you taking to...
Pardon?
What steps are you... is the tribe taking to further educate its people? And what steps do you think the state court system should take to further educate?
We tend to do things around public hearings, what's going into something, but I don't know that we do. We do provide notice when a law is amended or a law is adopted. We provide notice, and maybe we need to provide more educational programs within the community. You know, I think that's part of what I'm hearing and part of what I'm understanding, because even myself, you know, the judicial system is very complex.
Mm-hmm.
There are all these different types of courts. There's all these different types of court proceedings, and it's to some degree the same at tribal court, because do you go here or do you go there? Do you go there first or here first? I mean, that's a fair question that anybody would have. You know, my sister just recently went through a divorce, and she was going to go to Illinois. I said, no, stay here. You know, so, you know, but I had to speak to her to the extent that I could about, you know, what are the advantages and disadvantages.
Well, the judicial branch is generally viewed as the least understood a branch of government in the state system. Mm-hmm. We're in the federal system. Mm-hmm. And so I truly understand that. And although your tribal courts and law may be of more recent vintage, ours are older, but we're still trying to revise them, modify, and amend them so that they get better. And conditions change, so even if they were good 10 years ago, doesn't mean they're good today. So I understand your concern about continuing to change, and I appreciate that.
We need to change and build consensus, is what's important to go back to that practice of consensus.
Well, I think,
and I appreciate the questions about what are the results.
But I think that if you can get 2,000 people out to a public hearing, you're doing better than ordinarily the state does in getting out people.
It was a general tribal council meeting. It was not a public hearing. We get much less out of a public hearing.
You don't usually get that number of people to a county board meeting or anything else.
Thank you very much.
Is there
anybody who had signed up to speak that I missed as I went through the list, because I've crossed off some names because some people have told me someone that signed up isn't here anymore. Anybody that I missed? Okay, then with the time that we have left, this is what I'm proposing doing. Judge Nielsen, I'd like to have you come and add to or whatever you want to do to the discussion. Then I'm going to ask Judge Moore to do the same thing, and if you think we're misunderstanding something or you can shed more light on something, I would appreciate your doing that. And then, Linda Dallas, I'm going to ask you to come forward, and there were a couple little questions that I think you may know the answer to by your body language over there, but you can come and talk with us a little bit. I'm still going to have to rein you in a little bit because I want to be sure all of you get to say what you'd like to say. So why don't we start out, Tina, with giving Judge Nielsen, 10 minutes and see how that goes. Will that be okay?
I don't think I'll need it unless there are questions from the court that you'd like addressed.
There may be.
Before you begin,
yes.
we did have a few questions, and you said you could tell that there were a response by body language, and I saw the judge out there, Judge Robert Collins, raising his hand, wanting to answer some of those questions.
Just a minute.
So that to the extent we're going to get some answers or responses, if there's time available, I'd like to hear what his responses are to those questions.
That's fine, and there may be others that want to speak too, but before I go down that road and start opening this all up again, I do want to hear from our presenters who spend a huge amount of time providing good material for us and trying to set the stage so we could make a reasoned decision. So,
thank you, Chief Justice. And again, I'll be brief unless there's questions. You have heard from all the proponents of the rule today that the rule ought to be maintained in place, it ought to be permanently adopted, and it works. How often can you say that about anything in our law or government? So we're asking you today to permanently adopt the rule. I would, as much as I enjoy this, I would like to avoid being here again to do it a third time.
Well, it was permanently adopted. This is they asked for a 5-year review.
I don't know how to take that, so I'll ask you to permanently adopt it with no more reviews. How would that be?
I think we get it.
I have not heard today a single complaint that relates to the operation of 80154. That's remarkable. That we've gone 7 years, we've now gone through this process, we've invited comment from lots of sources, and not one person here has come to say the rule as it's put together doesn't work. I think that's remarkable. The tack that this hearing today has taken, I think, is maybe one that I didn't expect, and probably maybe many of you didn't anticipate before we started. I think it was interesting to combine a hearing on two separate petitions, which in the end appeared to be very different in purpose. The petition 1402 was filed with the request to dissolve 80154, and yet none of the petitioners testified about a direct experience with the rule, except for the very first petitioner, who actually utilized the rule, objected to it, and that objection was noticed and upheld by the circuit court, and her case remained there. The rule worked. So I haven't heard anything about it not working. There is a concern, and I hear your concern because this really wasn't what I expected. I expected that the argument today would be, or the concern that has been previously expressed about the working of the rule, is the risk that will throw a non-member under the tribal bus, if you will. And we're taking people potentially out of the circuit court arena and sending them to an arena where we don't have assurances of process and outcome. And I know, Chief Justice, you used the phrase a number of times today, constitutional rights, and I'm not...
it's a right of access, and it's in the Wisconsin Constitution.
Well, I mean, that's fine, and understand, that's fine. I understand. We've talked about the jury trial, and other than that, I don't really know where that phrase constitutional rights goes, because we haven't discussed it. But in any event, the safeguards are there in the rule. Safeguards are there in that circuit judges exercising sound discretion, utilizing the framework of the rule, particularly in light of this court's decision in Croner, which will provide adequate cautions to us judges who take up that task. Second, the fact that the court retains jurisdiction for a period of years. Third, that a party can make a motion to have the court resume that jurisdiction. And maybe most importantly, in a particular case, that there is a right of immediate interlocutory appeal on the issue of transfer. The conversation that I'm hearing this afternoon surprised me, because now we're focusing not on the transfer of cases from circuit court to tribal court, but on how to get cases out of tribal courts into our courts. I think that's a slippery slope. It's not really what we're about today in this rule. I can talk about it briefly, but I think we ought to be very cautious in going down that road for these reasons. Using 80154, we have litigants who are in the circuit court, and one of those litigants, or the court, if it determines it to be appropriate, says, this may be a good case for tribal court. That requires a hearing, requires notice. Everybody is in the same court in which the case is filed to make a determination about whether the transfer ought to take place. What we're talking about on the opposite side is the circuit court having no involvement, two litigants in the tribal court, someone in the tribal court saying, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm going to go to the circuit court and ask them to take my case, bypassing the tribal court judge and any kind of determination that is the opposite of what we're doing here. So that concerns me. I think it leads to forum shopping. I think it's a rule that automatically permitted that would be properly reviewed as paternalistic on the part of our courts. But that's not to say that there isn't maybe a way to get there. My understanding is that the Ho-Chunk Nation has adopted a rule in its judiciary that permits the transfer of cases from its court to ours, the mirror image, if you will, of 80154. And I think if litigants in a tribal court that had such a rule could petition their court, and their court could make the transfer, if there was something that you think should be included in our rule that we would receive such a transfer, I think that closes the circle on how we cooperate between tribal courts and state courts. In the absence of that type of rule, I think all we can do is perhaps ask tribal courts to consider it. They are sovereign nations. They have the ability to create their own courts and rules, and we'll just have to see how that works out over time. But even if that doesn't happen, I think Mr. Stenz will give you the absolute right answer. What happens if you have an unhappy litigant there? We don't have to shortcut a process that can still provide that relief. Anybody can come file in circuit court. Anybody can pay a filing fee and start an action. You know, serve that person so that gives the circuit court personal jurisdiction. So, I have the both subject matter and personal jurisdiction to act, and then we'll take it up as a Teague matter.
Did I just hear you say that one way to close the circle is to require that in order for 80154 to be in play, the tribal court to which a case might be transferred would have to have a mirror image of that rule in place?
No, Justice, I don't think you heard that entirely correctly. What I'm saying is, we have a system that works in one direction. And the questions that have been posed today by a number of the justices have been, well, what if you don't want to be in tribal court?
Pose those questions. Though.
Well, right. And a number of you have. And the answer is that that's a tricky, again, I think that's a tricky situation unless a tribe has its own method so that it can make such a transfer. And if we want to do something in our rules or statutes that says if that happens, we'll receive it, it closes the loop from the standpoint that tribal courts and circuit courts are both looking at the potential to do this, both directions. That's what I'm saying. But I don't think that there's a way to force that. And in the absence of forcing it, we still have access to our courts. That has never left us.
It's been a long time since I've been in practice. But it used to be when you filed a divorce action, you had to allege there was no other action pending in another court that asked for this relief. Now, maybe you don't have to do that anymore.
No, you do, and I think a court...
So you'd have to say there was a matter pending
it
in
is a matter
tribal
of,
court.
It is a matter of pleading, and,
right.
And yes.
So it's still there. Well, maybe it would be opened as a special proceeding to transfer, not opening a new case. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think it I don't think it prohibits the filing, because you can always have somebody file in two different courts and ask for a determination on venue. But you do need to make the disclosure
right.
about whether another case is there.
It's pending. Right. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
I'll let Judge Moore take over. The
I see you're trying to escape. Okay. Judge Moore. Now, Linda Dallas, would you like to make a few closing comments?
Thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity to come before you. It is a wonderful opportunity. I'll never forget this day. I'm sure my son is with me as well. This is my baby, Dylan. He was here with us earlier when we originally started this, and he was had the opportunity to meet a lot of you. And he had one of your pictures signed by all of you that we have at the house. In the testimony that I've listened today, towards the end, I've had a very difficult time because as an advocate, as a general tribal council member, as a mother, as a sister, as a friend, as a family member, community member, I've helped a lot of people. I can't even think of all the people, but just sitting here, a lot of things flooded back to my mind. And I actually shed a couple of tears sitting here because it's very difficult to sit here and to see and to listen to people that have been hurt so deeply, that have had such traumatic things happen in their lives because our houses are not in order. And I think that you heard today that, I don't know if running rogue is the appropriate terminology for the tribal court system within our tribe, at least. And it sounds like there may be in some of the other ones as well from some of the testimony was provided. However, I am thankful for the individuals that had the courage that came here today to speak to you. We are ordinary people. We are not attorneys. We're not specialists or anything. We're just ordinary, everyday people trying to do what we can to help our people and to help the people that come into our tribal jurisdictions. And I think that some of the issues that were not addressed today that I'm not feeling comfortable leaving here with, and I'm hoping that we that you take some time in your deliberation and take into consideration, is that didn't really get a straight answer, for lack of better terminology, with regard to jurisdiction over non-tribal members and the federal laws that apply to those individuals.
You'll probably get a statement on that by the U.S. Supreme Court before too long, given what we heard about Dollar General pending and having oral argument December 7th. So,
right. So I'll be paying attention to that as well. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there's a lot of really nice pictures painted today by the individuals that came here, and there's a lot of really nice people here. They're wonderful. They're professionals, you know. And along with those pretty pictures also come some very ugly pictures, and you heard some of them today. You know, one of the primary concerns that I have, and that I know that the petitioners have, there are several people that wanted to be petitioners, but they're scared to be petitioners. They don't want to sign their name. There's the fear, like I spoke of earlier, of the retribution, of the retaliation of the veterans. You heard from Kathy Matoxin today, you know, we have to go back home. We have to go back to our communities. We got to deal with this. I got a couple cases going that I'm not real sure how that's going to roll after speaking down here. You know, I wish I could move them out of them forums into a different one. I'm going to have to see if I can do that, actually. But we talked about there's problems with the child support system. Heard a lot of good things about it, but there's a lot of things that aren't going too good either. You have testimony from former Chairman Edward Delgado. You know, we had a lot of issues that came forward when he was in office. I was his senior policy advisor. We had to deal with a lot of families, primarily mothers, that were struggling because they weren't getting the child support that they needed to take care of their children. There weren't the enforcement mechanisms. I talked about my own case and several other cases where I'd be willing to bet that they came for the cases into the circuit court systems in the county and the state systems, those parties did not come looking to be placed into the tribal court system. And I would be willing to bet money that had you, if you take the time to ask the parties that are inside the tribal court system, they don't want to be there. But we don't have a mechanism to get out of there. You keep saying that we do. They're telling us that we don't. I think I'm going to experiment with a couple of things. If I can, with my own case and with some individuals that I think that may be willing. There were several young mothers that we talked about. You know, it started out with a handful of them that presented themselves to the business committee, and they shut the doors and turned away and said, we don't want to hear it, you know. We get into the public forum, and our general tribal council said, oh, you know, we met with the families. We dealt with them. It's all resolved. Well, we're not here today because they met with us, and we talked about it, and we resolved it. It's because it's not being resolved. They don't talk about it. You know, we talked about the lack of representation. That's, I'm sure, not just on our reservation. I have sought for at least 25 years to have training provided to tribal members and non-tribal members, whoever we can get to represent the people that come into those jurisdictions. I had to teach myself what I know, and I don't know everything, you know. It's like learning a foreign language, like learning Chinese or Greek or Italian or something, because the law is just a whole different animal all by itself. And I am in no way fully comprehensive of the law or how it works and all those things, but I do the best that I can. I've had to defend myself. I've had to defend my family and my children. I've had to defend community members. And in the process of doing that, I've had to learn along the way. So I don't have a formal education. It's just the school of hard knocks and getting kicked around inside of our tribal judicial system, but I don't go down very easy, and I always get back up and brush myself off, smudge myself off, give thanks to the Creator, you know, give me what I need, take me forward, you know, and I've gotten as far as I have. I said to Kathy today, I can't believe we're sitting here. We should have been able to resolve this internally inside of our own tribe. Had they made the adjustment to our tribal laws like we're talking, or you said talking about here today, we wouldn't be sitting here because we're all from the same tribe, you know, and I'd be willing to bet money that there's people in other tribes too, but there's a lot of fear. A lot of fear that people aren't willing to risk their jobs, risk their homes, risk their livelihoods and stuff. They're not going to come out to do those things. You know, another thing that we talked about is some things that we did not touch on, I think that's important, is that we didn't talk about the lack of trust. We didn't talk about the lack of respect. You know, those things go hand in hand with the due process. When you have a body that's going to hear you, a tribunal that's supposed to be fair, objective, independent, and impartial, they're not. They know they're not, or they know they're not. They bring the issue forward, and they won't recuse themselves, and you're forced to be subjected to them. And then you have the cases. We have a lot of matters that are overturned from our administrative hearing bodies up at the appellate level, and that's records that you can go and see. They're open records. Because they refused to recuse themselves. Previously with the appeals commission, they would, when the parties knew their right and asserted that right to request the recusal or the disqualification, the judicial officers would refuse to recuse or disqualify themselves, stating that they didn't feel that they were, or acknowledging the conflict of interest and saying that I feel I can be objective in going forward. However, inside our tribal rules, it states in there, in order for that judicial officer to remain in their seat, that both parties have to agree to that, and it has to be either in that proceeding, it has to be orally and placed onto the record officially, or it has to be in writing an agreement from both of them. And I'd be willing to bet you, if you go into our records, we don't have any of those in there, because it's been a long 25 years. We're going into 30 years here. And the new judiciary that's come, it's very challenging. Myself and actually Charlene Cassay were the first two cases that came into the new United Judiciary. I could not believe the way that we were treated. I couldn't believe the way that our cases were handled. They were untimely. I couldn't get a response. Yes, for clarification, you couldn't get clarification. Mine was something with regard to an election process that we were having a dispute about whether or not the, because we had done some business inside the General Tribal Council, and we had done an extremely unusual method to conduct the elections, and we were challenging it, saying that we had to abide by the primary process because we had more than the number that was required to keep it under having a primary election. But the case with Charlene Cassay was very close to home to her. That was her livelihood. That was her job. In that case, it was just unbelievable. And I think, actually, I'm going to submit that for you to take a look at that. And I'm probably going to file my case so you can take a look at that. And there's a couple other ones, too, because, you know, when I had one of the tribal judges assist me when I was going through the stuff at the Oneida Appeals Commission, he said, you know, Linda, he said, don't be offended. He said, don't get mad. He said, but I want to tell you this. He said, you should write books. You should write fiction books, he said, because nobody would believe that this stuff really goes on.
Well, the truth is often stranger
right.
than
and I. But I said, but I have the documentation, and I have the certified letters, and I have the emails, and I have the records. You know, so that's, and I'm just one person out of the thousands of people that come into these systems, you know. So I guess what I'm here for today is I'm here to beg you to take all these things into consideration and to really take a look at the rule and its deficiencies. And there's some things that need to be placed inside there, I think, that that you do have the power to place in there that will afford us our constitutional rights, that won't strip us of our procedural rights or our substantive rights. With you know, there's nothing the Supreme Court can do about people sitting on our panels that won't be ethical or moral in their decision making. You know, I guess that's a little war we're going to have inside our own tribe here. But you know, I very much appreciate that, because you're taking the time to listen to all of us, because there's what you've heard today is there's a lot of inconsistencies, and that the applications of the rules and the laws and the processes, at least within the Oneida tribe, you got a pretty good look inside there. I can't speak about the other tribes, but you know, there's just there's some things that need to be straightened out. And I disagree with what Chairwoman Tina Danforth said with regard to I agree with the fact that there's variables, you know, in some things that that are going to be different, because we are different cultures, different traditions, different practices. However, there are some things that should remain true at all times. In our Constitution, we are embedded inside of it is the United States Constitution. That's not inside every tribe's constitution, but that's in our Constitution. We have our Oneida Constitution rights, our Wisconsin Constitution rights, and our United States Constitution rights. And they're, at this point, they are being violated. And the thing with the consistency, though, in what she's saying in those variables, some things that should not have variables are due process. Your procedural rights, your substantive rights, all those things, they should be consistent across the board in every single tribal jurisdiction. Those are some things that should not be that should not waver. They should not be different. They should be fair, and they should be consistent across the board for everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for coming in today and for taking all the time that you have. And if some of the people that you know that had to leave, or that anybody knows that wants to submit something in writing to us, you can certainly do that and send it to Julie Rich's attention, Post Office Box 1688. Now, there was Judge Collins, you were waving back there at one particular point, and I think it was something about there's no way to get out of tribal court if you're there into circuit court. Was that what you wanted to address? And if not, will you please come forward, state your name for the record,
sure.
And then tell
Judge
us
Robert
what you
Collins
wanted to address.
From the United Family Court, and I had my hand raised in the back. I came in after the young lady Nona Danforth spoke, and Justice Ziegler asked the question about assistance for situations where there's allegations of abuse, and I was just going to mention that Wise Women Gathering Place in Green Bay and Judicare are two options that individual would have that would be available for them. Danforth's not here now. I perspective, but Ms. Dallas passed that information along to Nona Danforth. And I guess in closing, I would just ask each and every one of you to give a read to the former petitioner's statement. There was one petitioner who asked that she be dismissed from the case. That was after she had an opportunity to have her case heard before the United Family Court. And I would just urge you all to give that another read. I think it's a good view of the system, at least in the family court that we operate today.
Justice Bradley has a question.
Before you sit down, my recollection is that Wisconsin Judicare has an Indian law office or section dedicated to Indian law within Wisconsin Judicare.
They do, and they have another subsection that deals with cases where there's domestic abuse.
The question I had was relating to D, which said that direct the Oneida Appeal Commission to grant all transfer cases requests involving custody, et cetera, and that this was removed from the agenda.
That was before my time. I was not a judge with the tribe when that was going through.
There was somebody else that raised that hand, Egypt, that said you could do it. Thank you. And
Your Honor, those petitions that were submitted were actually requests that we had come before the we had vetted them through the business committee and into the legislative operating committee, which they turned us away at each instance, and that's what rose to the level of us exercising our constitutional rights of calling a general tribal council meeting. And the reason why those were is because we had, well, Nona was one of them. The six ladies that appeared before the business committee were several others, and then there was, I think we had a total of 17 ladies, parents, that they couldn't get them out of the up and out.
There wasn't a mechanism to transfer back to circuit court, and you all tried to use it and were not able to do that.
That's at that point when we were asking. We were told, I was told in my official capacity working for the chairman's office, because I was trying to help these parents and these individuals, and those were tribal members and non-tribal members, native non-tribal members and non-native. But we were told that there was not a way for that to happen. And so, like Nona had stated earlier, she had three different attorneys, and they couldn't get any relief inside of the tribal court system either, and they tried to move it outside of the tribal court system, and they weren't allowed to do that.
For your own case, though, you were in circuit court. Is that correct? And
that's
you
right.
Was transferred to the tribal court? Is that correct?
No, they came for my case. That's why I was raising the issue that many times they have gone to get the cases. None of the parties asked for those cases to be transferred to tribal court.
You were in the circuit court, and then there was something about an appeal.
In Outagamie County, I had received notice, I think, that they were going to try to transfer that in. And I appeared, but my ex-husband did not appear, Attorney Carol Long came on behalf of the tribe. And I was really surprised that, because neither one of us initiated that action, we were perfectly happy, and we wanted nothing to do with the tribal court system for that process.
So you stayed in circuit court?
Well, I had to battle it all with the circuit court judge, you know, and share my perspective, you know, what was going on. And it was because we had the petitions for the General Tribal Council meeting to requesting to investigate all the Oneida Appeals Commission members, which was the entire judicial body,
okay.
And then because of the lawsuits that were pending.
I think someone else had a comment. Did you want to talk about this?
Any other questions? First from the bench, please. Anybody else from the bench?
Do you want to talk about that?
You wanted to say something? Okay. Please say your name for our record so that...
My name is Kathy Elma Thompson. I never received a letter about transferring my case, my child support case. I just happened to go over to a great aunt of my son's, and his father was there. And he asked me about why we were going to court for child support. And I wasn't aware of it. I never received anything. So he showed me his letter. He got his letter, and we had court the next day. And I showed up, and we went together, and I said, stated that I did not want my case in the Oneida Tribe of Indians of Wisconsin because I would not be treated fairly. And he basically stated the same thing. And I stated it because I'm politically active and there's a lot of people that like to yell at me and stuff like that. But anyway, he told them because of his last name when the judge asked him why he didn't want to be in Oneida, he said, because I'm a Christian. And Christians get treated different. And my son did get treated different because he was a Christian. And they left. My child support continues to remain in Outagamie County.
So you stayed in Outagamie County?
Yes.
But the judge didn't transfer to the tribal.
And I think maybe my last argument was, I said, I believe we have dual citizenship. You know, what happened to that dual citizenship we're protected under, supposedly under our Constitution and under the U.S. Constitution. And then he said he was aware of that, and then he said, okay, I'll leave your case in. That's where it's remained.
He is the judge.
Whoever the judge was in Outagamie County.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I wasn't, I never received anything and I wasn't aware of it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank each and every one of you for coming today. And for those of you who didn't speak, thank you for your attention and for any submissions you made previous to this hearing and any that you would like to submit to us later. With the hour being what it is, I will conclude the public hearing on both of the rules petitions, and the court is adjourned. Thank you. Who are the trial judges? Do you know Judge Whitefish, who are coming to the judicial conference? Chip, do you know who's representing?
Thank you.
Good. So did I. I know.
Oh, something
role.
Like that. Anyway.
What I had to say was representing we have a judicial conference this week, and I want you to know what tribal judges. You don't know. Okay. We'll find out when we get there tomorrow.
shake your hand, but I have a...
Okay.